in picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views. The views of our guests, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But, of course, we welcome your calls, but hold them for the time being. We have with us for the first half hour Fernando Marquette, and, of course, he was with the brigade that went ashore at the Bay of Pigs back 43 years ago. It would have been in 1962 that they, 1961, the attack. So this would be 42 years ago. He was a young man at that time, 18 years of age, and young and idealistic and thinking they were really going to make a difference, they were going to return freedom to their country. And, of course, they had no idea of what really lay ahead. And it's an amazing, amazing story. And Fernando told us much of this during the first hour. And, of course, we'll allow some of it to be repeated here during the second hour because some of our listeners weren't with us the first hour. Fernando, thank you so very much for being back with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Dr.
McCullough. All right, fine. And, of course, now, of course, you're here living in the United States. You've been here ever since the Bay of Pigs, ever since you got out of prison there. How many of the people, men with the brigade, were kept in prison for the full 30 years or 20 or 30 years? Do we have any idea?
I say about all except the one that were left behind. I say about a dozen of them, but most of the 1,400 men were in prison and were finally exchanged in December of 1962.
All right, but there were about 12 of them who were had to serve this prolonged sentence.
Correct, and about another 9 that were executed by the firing squad of Castro.
Now, why were they executed? Were they members of the his revolutionary group?
They were members of Batista. They were also member of Castro's army, and he had an agenda with them, evidently. He would not include them on the deals and on the exchange of prisoners that was taking place, and they were on a funny trial and executed shortly after.
But of course Batista didn't execute the people that opposed him. In fact, Fidel Castro was involved in the trial of revolution, and of course he got out in a few years.
Out of the 15-year prison, he only did about 2 months, and he wrote on his memoirs, you know, how what good of a life he was having. You know, certainly not the same life we have in prison.
And so, of course, everybody who says, oh, Batista was so terrible, and, you know, isn't it much better, of course, under Fidel Castro, he is a brutal tyrant, isn't he, who really kills his enemies. But did Batista kill his enemies?
Batista was also a dictator, but nothing compared to Castro. Nothing compared to Castro.
And yet, of course,
still, after 44 years executing people, and throwing people in jail for long prison terms. And right now, this is not an armed struggle. This is not a military operation. This is just people that are asking for the rights to leave their country, to practice freedom of religion, freedom of speech, and freedom of assembly. And for that, Fidel Castro put him in prison for 25, 28 years.
But of course, what really disturbs me is we have so many people in this country, and they are communists and communist sympathizers, who tell us, oh, there's freedom there, this is workers' paradise, you know. And of course, when you ask them why these people want to leave the country, risk their lives to leave the country, they attack you and demonize you. There really are people in America, and even within our own government, who are very much pro Fidel Castro, and that's really what's so frightening today, because the American people have been told that communism is dead. Over and over and over again.
Well, he's well and alive in Cuba right now, and they think he might be a hapless dinosaur, and that by fruit that will fall by himself, but that hasn't been the case.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Fernando Marquette, and he was, of course, a very young man in 1961 when, of course, the Cuban Brigade attacked the Bay of Pigs. And what the young men who were with that brigade didn't know was that the landing site had been changed at the last minute, and the site that was picked was the one where they could not possibly win. And I talked to the man who was in charge of the war room at the Pentagon, and he said that when they finally realized what was going to happen, they changed the landing site, of why they all went out and got drunk, because they knew that, of course, our boys were going to be, the Cuban boys were going to be sacrificed there, which is exactly what happened. So we have, of course, a new listening audience here in the Monterey Bay area. Why don't you quickly review what happened that day, where you were, and of course, we'll tell as much of the story as we can.
Well, we were on board the Houston with was to be land a force of two battalions at Playa Larga, Long Beach. One of the battalions was able to land, the other one was not able to land. Later on, we have been doing some research, and we find out that those little landing craft, boats, they were purchased at Sears, and the outboard engine were of very bad quality, that the radios were purchased at an outfit that at the time was the equivalent of Radio Shack. So everything was done on a way that they could not trace it to military, U.S. military supplies or anything of that nature.
Yes, but a lot of these things, I mean, the descriptions of the outboard motors, they wouldn't start. The propellers fell off. I mean, this is no way to run an invasion if you're really trying to win.
No, you better believe it. That's the recipe for disaster. And we didn't know that. Some of the people that were look at the photos of the landing site, they say, those things over there are reef, and they say, oh, no, these are picture from YouTube, these are low clouds, and of course, we figured that good old United States would know better than we do, then. So we trusted everything until finally everything came down, hell broke loose, and we find out that things were not as promised.
And, of course, what happened was they'd been promised air cover, they'd been promised resupplies, and there was no air cover, there were no supplies, there was no way to break out. There were 50,000 Cuban troops aligned against their 1,200 or 1,400. And, of course, it was very, very obvious that after 3 days, there were no way that they were going to possibly survive. And this is the most amazing thing. They picked the one site in Cuba where they knew those boys would lose. And then, of course, they withheld the air cover that had been promised. And nobody to this very day asked what was the real reason behind the invasion. And, of course, why did we send those boys in to die? We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and our guest this afternoon is Fernando Marquette, and we're going to repeat some of what we said in the last hour because we have an entirely new listening audience. And so, basically, how did you get on shore? Were you going in on a landing craft?
At first, but we were Castro's airplane attacked us, and we were left right there on a little boat and a little raft. They cut the line, and the people that were on the fast boat were able to get closer to the Blackguard, which have a lot of firing power, and the ship kind of retired. And we were there in the middle of the beach, about 3 miles from shore, about 3 miles from the ship. And finally, when the Castro's Air Force left, they came back and picked us up. We were only three, and then we got on board the ship. We saw that, well, now things would be different, and that's when Castro's Air Force really came after the only ship that was left over there until it finally sunk it.
Now, how many planes did he have? Because supposedly the plan was we were going to send our bombers over, and they were, of course, going to surprise the Air Force. Planes were all parked there on the runway. They were all going to be destroyed. And supposedly they were all destroyed but one or two. Is that true, or were there a lot more planes than we were told?
Well, the air raids were supposed to be carried on a more intensive way, and they were canceled, and to a point that we were not able to achieve our goal of a completely eliminated Castro's Air Force. And he was left with a couple of Sea Fury British airplanes, fighters that were very fast, and a couple of T-33s, equivalent of F-80 jets. And those planes did away with our old lumbering B-26 that had to fly 5 hours, 2.5 coming in from Nicaragua and 2.5 going back, and being able to provide just a half an hour cover air cover to the brigade.
And of course, we had Adlai Stevenson, we had our people in the United Nations saying, oh, the American doesn't know anything about this, we have nothing to do with this. Now, everybody in the world knew we were behind this, but they could use that to say, well, we didn't want anybody to know that we were behind it, so that's why we didn't send any aid, that's why we didn't send any supplies, that's why we didn't send any air cover, we just left the boys there, that we financed, and we trained, and we sent in, and we left them there to lose.
Now, Timothy, let me give you another insight. Probably you haven't heard this one before. Our B-26 and Castor's B-26 were identical, except that under the wing there was a little blue ribbon, and that was the only thing that's supposed to differentiate friend from foe. So most of the time you didn't know which friend it was until you see the fire coming at you, because they were both identical. And that was another thing that the CIA said, well, they would think that our Air Force are people from Castro that had defected, so that was another plan. Another thing I must point out, most of the Castro's pilot that fought with us at that time very bravely and gave us a lot of hard time, most of them are here now in exile.
In other words, they finally defected because, in fact,
yes,
everybody who can get out of Cuba does. I mean, I think the hardest thing for Americans to realize is that people every day risk their lives to get out of this prison, and yet we're giving massive amounts of humanitarian aid. How much money have we given to Fidel Castro this year in the name of humanitarian aid?
About $165 million.
So we give him $165 million. We're only halfway through the year. And, of course, we send the people back. Three of them were recently picked up trying to get into this country that hijacked a boat. We sent them back. Fidel Castro killed them, executed them immediately. Later, within the last couple of weeks, another 10 hijacked a boat. We sent them back with the promise, well, they wouldn't be killed. They'd only get a 10-year prison term. We are financing Adolf Castro with large amounts of money. And then, of course, saying, gee, isn't it terrible that tyrant's still in power? It's sort of like what we're doing as far as Kim Jong-il over in North Korea, who's supposedly the terrible threat to us. And then, of course, we're supplying with massive amounts of food and oil, and we're building a plant for him. And, of course, then we're saying, gee, he's such a threat to us. Are we perhaps maybe financing the best enemies our money could buy? How do the Cuban people in this country feel about the fact that we're giving all this money to this vicious tyrant who kills his own people?
Well, sometimes we find it unbelievable because there are groups out here that are very well-motivated trying to help the Cuban people over there, sending humanitarian aid, and you have Pastor for Peace and a lot of organizations that trying to give aid and comfort to the Cuban people that is really suffering. But what they don't understand that the Castro government is the only one who distributes all this humanitarian aid. Most of the time you will find it in a tourist store or in a hospital belonging to the government. Very seldom it gets to the Cuban people.
And so what were all these good-hearted people are really doing is keeping the tyrant in power.
No doubt about it. That's why he had been able, after the fall of the Soviet Union, to stay in power.
And, of course, as we pointed out during the previous hour, of course, he's borrowed a lot of money from Great Britain and Germany and France and Italy and all these European countries that we're subsidizing by keeping our NATO troops over there so they don't have to put their money into for their defense. And we spent, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, really, year after year, financing NATO and of course, defending Europe so that they can lend their money to Fidel Castro, which he doesn't pay back. And why would we do something that stupid?
I don't have any idea, but I know that right now they're suffering. Sorry that they gave Castro all this credit. Cuban foreign debt is $12 billion, and in some of these cases they haven't been able to make payment on their interest alone. The Soviet Union, for many years, subside Castro at the tune of $500 to $800 million a year, and now Spain and Italy and many countries they find out after giving Castro many loans and very liberal terms that Castro can hardly make a payment on the interest. So they are very sorry that they did Castro, they did business with Castro.
All right. Well, you know, of course, then when we talked before, I asked you about the stories that I keep hearing about the fact that Fidel Castro has laboratories where he's developing both chemical and biological weapons and very sophisticated chemical and biological weapons. Have you heard those same stories?
Yes, I have. Also, I have heard that he's harboring a lot of terrorists in Cuba. You have the Spanish ETA, you have the Irish Army that also is a heaven, the Colombian guerrillas, and also you have been trafficking with drugs. That's his favorite part. He say that that's one way to do away with the United States is supplying drugs to the American youth.
Well, of course, the thing is that it really seems very, very strange to me as I commented in the last hour that we're so concerned about the weapons of mass destruction, the chemical and biological weapons that Saddam Hussein had halfway around the world, and we're not concerned at all about the weapons of mass destruction, the chemical and biological weapons that we have just 90 miles off our Florida Keys. Has anybody addressed that question in the Cuban community?
No, as a matter of fact, they haven't.
All right, fine. Well, there are a lot of questions we ask here at Radio Liberty that most people, of course, just sort of take for granted. Now, of course, what's happening? How many people are trying to escape from Cuba a month? Do we have any idea how many people risk their lives,
the lives
of their families?
First of all, I must say this. The Cubans fleeing the island, they're not seeking the American dream. They're fleeing the communist nightmare. After 44 years of false promises, that's the only way. That they'd rather die on a raft than believing on that system. And right now, as we speak, we have 75 dissidents that have been condemned to 1,400 years in prison just for speaking about freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, being able to leave the country, whatever they want. These are journalists, poets, writers, and they have been given long prison terms just for asking about the civil society and the freedoms that just about everyone in the world should be entitled because of the human rights.
Well, of course, my understanding is that, you know, there are dozens of people every week who try to escape from that. Is that an exaggeration? Do we have any idea on average how many people try to escape? And of the people who try to escape, how many people are able to get here to America?
Well, it had been saved 3 out of 5 make it and the rest perish. Now with this wet feet and dry feet law, and I'm sure you're aware of that one.
Well, why don't you explain that to our listeners?
Wet and dry feet, it has to do with the fact that if they reach land, American, U.S. soil, they are able to stay and be granted asylum because they got a proven fear of persecution. However, they intercepted in the open seas or before they reach American soil, they are being sent back to Cuba.
In other words, our Coast Guard is defending Fidel Castro, and if they can pick them up there, they send them back, and they may be slaughtered, they may go to prison, they'll lose all their privileges, and of course they'll be severely punished for trying to escape the tyranny, and we're doing everything we can to send them back.
One of those three young blacks that were executed by Castro for attempting to hijack a boat, one of them was the reason he left Cuba. He was completely aggravated and strangled by the government. He couldn't move. He couldn't find a job. He couldn't do anything. And then on top of that, the poor man killed a cow because he needed to eat. And the sentence in Cuba nowadays for killing a cow is between 8 and 12 years. To killing a man is only 15 years. So this man was supposed to go to jail for killing a cow. Instead, he tried to hijack a boat to leave and flee, and Castro went ahead and executed.
But we sent him back. It wasn't that, you know, that he
That's
was,
correct.
He was very close to our shore, and of course trying to escape being sent to prison, and of course we sent him back to die. And of course, how do you justify that? I mean, men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And our government is doing everything they can to finance and keep Fidel Castro in power, but we don't tell the American people that. We call it humanitarian aid, and that really sounds so wonderful and so benign.
I have to say, Dr. Monteith, if you allow me, that the American people don't know what the Cuban people is going through now.
They sure don't, and when we get back, I want you to tell them as much as you can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anglo-American establishment that gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamet. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamet, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamet isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamet at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I want to tell you a little bit about the water filters. And, of course, we carry the Berkey water filters. We carry the Big Berkey, which is made of stainless steel, has ceramic filters, and does a great job of filtering out the bacteria and many of the heavy metals and large parts of the pesticides and other chemicals that are in your water. It sweetens the water, and people just love the Big Berkey. It's been around for 150 years. Improved the filters are ceramic, and of course they're packed with activated carbon. And ordinarily, these Big Berkey filters cost $279. We sell them for $239, and if you buy it from us, you get a four-tape set and or a video that we have produced. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But if you live in California, we can't sell you a Big Berkey. However, because they're, of course, available in every state but California and, of course, Iowa. There is, however, one that's available in every state but Iowa, and that's called a Berkey Light, and it's a portable water filter, and, of course, it filters about the same size as a Big Berkey. It is transparent. It's made of Lexan, which, of course, is the same thing as you make bulletproof glass out of, so it's shatterproof. And, of course, the filters are different. They're called Black Berkey filters. They'll last 2 to 4 years, depending on how long you use them, and they just do more than just filter the water. They actually purify it, and of course they take out, you just can't find any bacteria at all that gets through this system, and of course it does a much better job in taking out chemicals hydrocarbons, things of that sort. Now, neither filter will actually take out the fluoride, but you can get a special attachment with both the Big Berkey and of course the Berkey Light to take out the fluoride. You can see both of these at our website, which is radioliberty.com. That's www.radioliberty.com. Of course, the Berkey Light is $199. You get the video or the four tapes that we produce if you give us a call there. And again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Fernanda Marquette. We're talking about, of course, Cuba. Why don't you talk a little bit about the life in Cuba and the time we have left here?
Well, although the average Cuban feels like he might walk the street freely, the fact is that Cuba is like living in a large prison. No freedom of speech, no freedom of assembly, no freedom of religion. I must point out, I saw the interview that they did of the about this black young Cuban that was executed by Castro trying to flee the country. When this woman was asked about his son, she say, I'd rather see him dead than living the quality of life he was living in Cuba. That was a very strong statement that impacted me very much. A mother that will say, I'd rather see him dead. He didn't have no quality of life where he was living.
Now, was this a man who was living in Cuba, or was he living in the United States?
He was living in Cuba and attempted to flee, and this is one of the one Castro returned and was executed later.
Right.
To flee the country.
But, I mean, the man who was commenting on it, was his father?
Was her, his mother.
Oh, his mother. Is she living here or there?
She's living in Cuba. She
okay.
granted an interview to a TV channel, and she expressed that she would rather see her son dead than leaving the quality of life she was leaving.
Well, I'm sure she's going to be severely punished for daring to say something like that.
Well, let me tell you, she lost a son, and she said at another time, I used to like Fidel Castro in the revolution, but not when he started killing people just for fleeing the country, when he starts suppressing the liberties. You know, that making right away, they changed their mind. And this poor woman, after she lost her son, it impacted me very much, the fact that she said, I'd rather see him dead than leaving the way he was leaving.
Well, of course, I mean, it really, the people are really impoverished. Now, we hear all these stories about, of course, first-class health care and first-class education for everybody. What's the truth of the matter?
Well, it's all a myth. Has been said, what are the three biggest success of the Cuban Revolution? And people will say, well, it would be health, sport, and education. And when you ask them what was the three biggest failure of the Cuban Revolution, they would have to say breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Well, that's sort of a sick joke, but you know, I think it's really very, very true. And of
very
course,
true.
What the American people don't realize is that the media here lies to us, and the New York Times and the Washington Post and all of the apologists for communism throughout the world will tell you the things that just aren't true. But it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is; if you hear it often enough, most people will believe. So. How many people? Do we have any idea? Are there 100 people who try to escape a week, or is there any average at all? Certainly.
Well, I have to say that one out of five Cubans is online waiting to get a visa through the United States Embassy in Havana. And if I go back in history, back in 1980 during the Murillo boat lift, 130 people were able to leave out of 500,000 that were online trying to get out. And this is the camps in Guantanamo in Panama, and this was just average people that just want to be able to leave in freedom. I think if the whole island is given a chance, Castro will be left over there by himself and brother.
Okay. Well, I think that the average individual does not understand what we have produced over there. And, of course, when Fidel Castro comes to the United States, who does he stop by to see? Why, his good friend David Rockefeller. We've recently put, of course, Cuba is in charge on the Committee of Human Rights in the United Nations.
That's like putting Al Capone in charge of bank robberies.
Right, and he would do a very good job of it.
I must point out one more thing. I'm black, and recently I wrote to Maxine Water, that represent my district, about the treatment of black people in Cuba. And she refused to meet with me, and she said that she don't have no rapport with Fidel Castro. And she also wrote me that the fact she was in Cuba during Fidel Castro's birthday was just a strictly coincidence. She was delivering humanitarian aid.
I see. And so we see these Marxists here in the United States, who praise Fidel Castro, and of course they talk about patriotism, but of course they have an entirely different loyalty. And if you were out there in the audience and you really believe communism is dead, ask yourself, if communism is dead, why are there 1.25 billion people living under communism in China, and there's communist North Korea, and there's communist Vietnam, and there's communist Cuba, and most of South America is going communist today, and most of Africa has gone communist, and you're never told what these wars are really all about. Because, of course, the media is not going to tell him. Well, I want to thank you very much, Fernando, and I hope we can get you back on some of our other programs in the not-too-distant future.
It is a pleasure, and thank you for having me.
God bless you. Thanks so much.
God bless you, too, sir.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. And you have to understand that, of course, there is no way that any people can remain both ignorant and free in a state of civilization. Thomas Jefferson said that over 200 years ago, and it's absolutely right. And, of course, if you're not getting the truth, why, you'll never, of course, be able to join us in this epic struggle to determine whether freedom can be preserved in America or should be lost forever.
we have a brand new video today on the Oklahoma City bombing. It's called Oklahoma, What Really Happened. And of course, it consists of a lot of never-before-seen video footage. Now, it was seen in Oklahoma City immediately following the bombing of the Murrah Building, the blackout across America. And in this footage, you're going to see the commentators talking about the other bombs that were in the building at the time of the initial bombing. We're told, of course, that Timothy McVeigh acted independently. We're told many things by the media, but wherein does the truth lie? Oklahoma City, what really happened, it will give you the opportunity to see long-suppressed video footage of what really transpired. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Oklahoma City, what really happened.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, this is the time when I want to tell you about a few of the other things we carry. One of them, of course, is Phonopoly, and it's a wonderful board game that will teach your children and your grandchildren, and maybe even you, if you have any problem reading, how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, how to pronounce words phonetically. And of course, it's really, of course, played just like Monopoly, and yet, of course, in 16 hours, why you can change a child's life. And you can actually teach them the basis of phonics, the 40 sounds of the English language, the 12 rules. Phonopoly, ordinarily these programs are $300, $400, $500, $600. This is $139.95, and we throw in a couple of books with it. It's called Phonopoly. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We also carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, which is on 22 CDs, and it'll take your child from grammar school all the way through high school graduation for $199.95. Everything is there, the lesson plans, the lessons, the textbooks, the tests, the answers to the tests, and all you, of course, have to get separately are the Saxon textbooks. Your child is not to be on the computer. They're to be reading, and of course, there are other books that, of course, in this set is the Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn and all of those wonderful books that we grew up on that children don't read any longer. And then, of course, we want to mention, of course, that we also carry Miracle 2 soap products, and we can't make any medical claims for them, but we will tell you that many of our listeners do, and, of course, we feel that Miracle 2 products really are beneficial. If you'd like, of course, to know more about them, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, or better still, get an introductory offer at a reduced price. Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Ask for the introductory package, which consists of the soap, the moisturizing soap, the lotion, the gel, and, of course, the neutralizer, and I'm really convinced that you'll really like them. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and of course with us on the line is probably one of the busiest men in the state of California, Tom McClintock. Tom, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Stan.
Well, let's go a little bit into the race. Now, you, of course, have declared for a governor, and of course, you're getting, I read some of the articles, they tell me everything wrong about you. And of course, I've known you for many years. You're a friend of our good friend, Eric Seastrand. And of course, you've been up there in California ever since I can remember, of course, doing everything you could to limit the power of government and limit spending and preserve the freedom of the American people. Tell us what your platform is going to be and why people should want to vote for you for the governor in case this recall, of course, goes through and Governor Davis is sent out to pasture.
Well, I tell you, the very first thing that I intend to do within moments of taking the oath of office is sign an executive order to rescind the tripling of the car tax. If this governor can claim that he has the legal authority to raise that tax by fiat, then by God, I can claim exactly the same authority and lower it back down by fiat. The next thing I will do is sign a stipulation in the case that I filed in the Superior Court in Pasadena last year to void $42 billion of outrageously overpriced electricity contracts that this governor got us into. Those contracts were negotiated with a clear conflict of interest. The governor's chief negotiator was receiving $200,000 a year in undisclosed income from Edison International. At the same time, he was negotiating contracts for the people of California, the express purpose of which was to keep Edison out of bankruptcy. That is why you were paying the highest electricity prices in the entire continental United States. The governor will not stipulate to those facts because it would require him to admit wrongdoing. I will stipulate to those facts, and we will begin the process of dramatically lowering California's electricity prices. The next thing I will do, is to sign a call for a special session of the legislature to rescind California's workers' compensation law and replace it with Arizona's workers' compensation law. Arizona workers' comp costs are one-fourth of what they are here in California. I will give the legislature 30 days to enact that legislation, and if they fail, I will take it to the ballot, and then they can explain to the voters why they refused to act while the state's job market was imploding. So with those three acts alone, and all of those gubernatorial acts, we can reduce taxes $4.2 billion. We can lower the electricity prices dramatically, and we can cut California's workers' compensation costs by three-fourths, and all of that before lunch.
All right. Now, Chris, the thing that really disturbs me is this negotiations on the latest the budget. And, of course, what we're really doing is not solving the problem. We're just sort of putting it off for the till next year. And, of course, they're borrowing, I don't know how many, $10 billion. And we're going to be paying how much?
More than that, at least $13 billion. It will cost more than $2.5 billion in interest alone.
And of course, we're getting some of the highest interest rates in the country because, of course, they've downgraded us to the lowest level of the lowest loan risk. People are afraid California is going to go bankrupt.
Well, we're two grades above junk bond status. That is the lowest credit rating in the country for any state. I believe it is the lowest that California has ever had. If we actually got to junk bond status, the state would be unable to borrow and it would default on its notes. But this budget that's sitting on the governor's desk that he has vowed to sign by Saturday is a rotting porch waiting to collapse. It's based on the illegal tripling of the car tax, which the courts will ultimately order be returned to people plus interest. So if they spend that money, they are blowing a multi-billion dollar hole in future budgets. And on top of that, they are borrowing over $13 billion for ongoing expenses in direct violation of Article 16 of the state constitution. That also will be challenged in court. And in addition to that, you have about $6 or $7 billion of Enron accounting gimmicks. When you untangle those from the budget, you find that we're actually spending about $2 billion more than we did last year, despite the fact that the state is, as you say, on the verge of bankruptcy.
And, of course, there aren't an awful lot of industries simply moving out of California because of the electricity costs, because of the workman's compensation costs, because California is no longer a climate that's really a good place for industry to be with the environmental regulations and all?
Well, we've lost over 200,000 jobs in the last year, 21,500 jobs in the month of May alone, while the rest of the country was actually adding jobs. So that'll give you some idea. But to give you some insight, about 8 weeks ago, Fidelity National, one of two remaining Fortune 500 companies in Santa Barbara County, announced that they were finally out of California. They were going to move to Jacksonville, Florida. With about 400 jobs just in Santa Barbara County alone. And the CEO was asked about that, and he said, this was not a complicated decision. There is no income tax in Florida. The sales tax is 6%, and it costs $40 to register your car. Why is anybody surprised we're leaving? And, of course, that's a decision not only that businesses are coming to, but that many individual families are coming to. This point in California's history is literally fight or flight time for Californians. Many are fleeing. Many more are realizing that this state is worth fighting for. And what we are seeing today is is something that happens very rarely in a democracy, but when it does, it's an awesome thing. People sensing a common danger, setting aside their domestic cares and their domestic pleasures, rising to the occasion, and in their capacity as citizens, recognizing that it is that they ultimately have a responsibility to set things right. How else do you explain the fact that in 92 years since the recall was placed in the state constitution, there have been 31 attempts to recall governors? Not one of them has gotten more than 10% of the required number of signatures. And yet now, today, this one, in record time, with 6 weeks to spare, has actually generated, the latest count is close to 2 million signatures, more than twice the number legally required. So something very big is going on out there, and I think it's just an awful lot of Californians who have had enough. They are rising up. They've never been involved in politics before. They've never paid much attention to public policy before. But now they realize that, conditions have grown intolerable. They can no longer be ignored. And you're watching this state rise to the occasion, and it is a wondrous thing.
Well, you know, it's really amazing to me. When I read the newspapers, they're all against the recall. Most of the major television is against the recall. The only people who seem to be in favor of the recall are the average individuals. So here we have really the power structure on one side. They really don't want the recall, and I'm suggesting not only the Democrat hierarchy, but even some people within the Republican Party are not really supporting it. But I think that the rank and file, a lot of Democrats are supporting it, a lot of Republicans. In fact, we're there are an awful lot of Democrats who signed on the recall?
About 30% of the signers, I'm told, were Democrats. But something else very interesting going on. There were 155,000 California citizens who carried those petitions. Now, you've heard all about all of the paid signature gatherers. 3,000 were paid. 152,000 were volunteer citizen activists who simply had had enough and decided they had to do something to set things right. And those 152,000 Californians, again, I'll bet you the vast majority of them had never circulated a petition before, took up that role as citizens.
Well, I was very interested that one of the men in my church had never talked about anything before with me, you know, and stopped me a couple of weeks ago and said, boy, you know, I hope we're going to get rid of the governor, and I hope we're going to get in Tom McClintock. So, I'd never thought, you know, that he was thinking about this at all. But obviously, a lot of people who, know that you, of course, are the one person who's always been up there consistently trying to cut the budget, trying to cut back on big government, which is strangling the state. And we're wasting so much money on all of these giveaway programs. And, of course, and certainly on employing so many people by government, and the governor, you know, is giving away money. I remember he actually hired this one Republican who betrayed the Republican Party a couple of years ago, and he gave him a full-time job. And then, of course, it turned out he had another full-time job working at a university. What was that all about?
I believe you're referring to one Mike Briggs,
right.
an assemblyman who sold out his constituency, broke his campaign promises, sided with Gray Davis on the budget that got us into this mess, tried to run for Congress, was soundly defeated, came in third in a congressional primary in his district, and then was rewarded both by Herb Wesson, the Speaker of the Assembly, and I am very angry and embarrassed to say, by the Republican Party. Each gave him an $8,300 a month job, not knowing the other one did. Now, that was the kind of complicity that we've seen in the past, and I think that that's what's turned off a lot of voters over the years, not only against the Democratic Party, but also against the Republican Party. I do believe that that is starting to change dramatically at the grassroots level. I think that the voters are finally seeing the Republican Party beginning to restore its dedication to those principles of limited government upon which it's founded.
And, of course, you've always been out there in the front lines talking about these things. In fact, you almost won the position of comptroller. And, you know, the fellow on the other side, he must have spent, what, $30 or $40 million? What were the figures? You didn't have very much money.
Well, actually, he outspent us by about a 5-to-1 margin. He spent about $7.5 million. I spent about $1.5 million.
And
you know the thing about that? I carried more Democratic crossover votes, more independent votes, more total votes than any other Republican running on the ballot last year. I carried, running down ticket, and there's about a 7% drop-off in votes between those who vote for governor and those who vote down ticket for state controller. Even with that 7% drop-off in votes, I carried 103,000 more votes than Bill Simon running at the top of the ticket. And that was despite, he spent about $20 million, I spent $1.5 million. My opponent in that race, well, I was outspent 5-to-1 by my opponent in that race. Simon was outspent 2-to-1 by Davis. I carried 103,000 votes more than he did. And I'll tell you something, that didn't happen because I was minimizing my differences with the Democrats. The people want change. And that's what the upcoming election for governor is all about. I come out of that election knowing that we've got a very solid core base of support out there that will not be shaken, even with a 5-to-1 spending disadvantage. Coming into this gubernatorial election, I think that puts us in a very solid position in a multi-candidate race, as the recall is shaping up to be, to succeed Gray Davis on October the 7th. And if we're able to do that, that will begin the recovery of California. As I said earlier, I've already laid out the first day's actions, and they are dramatic. We can turn the state around. Everything that has happened to California is destroyed our state's finances, devastated our public works, decimated our economy. All of those things are not because of some natural cataclysm. No act of God has struck down California. These are all acts of government. And the good news is we, the people of California, not only have the power to change that and the responsibility to change that, this election gives us the opportunity to change it, and we all have to rise with that occasion.
Well, you know, Tom, I've lived throughout the world. I've lived in Europe and Africa, and I've always come back to California, and this is my home, and I don't want to live here. It's the most wonderful place to live and the most beautiful place to live, but we've got to take California back. And I know that, you know, this really is the most exciting time, because here we have a chance to make dramatic changes, and, of course, California is what, either the sixth or the seventh largest economy in the entire world.
It used to be the fifth.
Right. Where are we now? Sixth or seventh?
I've seen estimates all over, but your point's well taken. We used to have a land of opportunity. That's what brought my folks here. My folks came out here in 1965 from Westchester County, New York. My dad had been out of work for over a year. My mom was a homemaker. They were desperate. They came out here looking for a better future for their kids. And they found it in California. They found good jobs. On a modest income, my folks were able to afford the home of their dreams, a 4-bedroom ranch home in Thousand Oaks, California. That home had a 40-foot swimming pool in the backyard. It was a third of an acre landscape. The house was 2 years old. And they bought that home in 1965 for $35,000. Now, if you adjust for inflation, those homes, if they were new, today should be selling for about $180,000. My folks still live in that house, and the homes in that neighborhood are 2.5 times that amount, which means that if my folks had come here to California today looking for a better future for their kids, they wouldn't have found it here. There's no way they could have even thought about affording the home that they could easily afford in 1965. They probably wouldn't have found work. We've lost 200,000 jobs in the last year. If they'd found work, they couldn't have gotten to it. My dad commuted 40 miles a day into downtown Los Angeles. In 1965, that was a 45-minute commute in rush hour. Today, it's 2 hours in rush hour. I remember that state. I remember my dad saying that electricity was getting to be so cheap that within 10 years, they'd no longer be metering it. And, you know, if that sounds ridiculous, remember that back in those days, we were building hydroelectric dams that today are producing electricity at 0.5 cents a kilowatt hour. At 0.5 cents a kilowatt hour, your average family electricity bill should be about $30 a year. We were building nuclear power plants that today are producing power at 3 cents a kilowatt hour. That was a land of opportunity, and I remember it. It was real. And it's been taken away from us.
And it's all by regulation. I mean, they blocked the building of power of the nuclear power plants. They blocked building of the dams. They're doing everything they can to disrupt this society using these crazy environmental justifications. And it is really to create chaos.
Yeah, and, speak of water. Many communities back in those days did not meter their water. Our storage capacity was so immense. And people look at water and the Colorado River, and they think the Colorado River is the major source of all water in the western United States. You know, the Colorado River is a junior sister to the Sacramento River. The difference is they store 70 million acre feet on the Colorado. We store only 7 million acre feet on the Sacramento. We've gotten to a point now where we can store less than 1 year's water capacity for the state of California. That, too, will come back and bite us in the very near future. But here's my point. These are all deliberate decisions, stupid decisions, made by people we elected. And this election gives us the opportunity to change that. We have everything in the world going for us. We have the most equitable climate in the entire North American continent. We are blessed with the most bountiful resources in the entire continental United States. We are poised on the Pacific Rim to dominate trade in the next century. All that we are lacking is good governance. And that's what this election's all about. And that's up to each of us as individual citizens.
Well, God bless you, Tom. Thank you so much for what you're doing. We hope to talk to you again a number of times.
I'll need everybody's help on this election. TomMcClintock.com is where you can sign up to help.
TomMcClintock.com. Go there, and God bless you. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, I'll tell you what, this is the most exciting time. We really can make a difference, but you're going to have to be involved with us. Give us a call here. Well, we don't have time, but we'll have Tom back again in the not-too-distant future.
Now, most people would laugh at the idea that there is or has been a secret society. I wanted to tell you about a tape we have. It's a talk I gave before the Concerned Women of America some years ago, and it basically goes back into the background behind the secret society, which was formed in England and eventually came to America and came to be known as the Council on Foreign Relations. It goes into the background of Cecil Rhodes. And how does that secret society that he created impact on you today? If you read the works of Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor, you'll understand that Professor Quigley is probably one of the leading experts today on history, but also a man who had the courage to speak out. You need to get the four-tape set, The Secret Government, to understand what Professor Quigley taught Bill Clinton. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to tell you about a couple of the other things we carry. One of them is Alamax, and it's a garlic product. It's a little tiny tablet, and of course it doesn't have any odor to it, but it's packed full of allicin, which is the active ingredient in garlic, and you don't want to have to eat an lot of garlic to get the medicinal properties out of it, but garlic is good for your blood pressure, it's good for your cholesterol, it's good for so many things, and of course one of the reasons I've been taking it, I've been told that many times it'll tend to keep you from getting colds. I haven't lost a day from work here, and I guess it's 9 months since I've been taking Allicin. And then, of course, if you'd like to know more about Allicin, 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. We hope many of you will want to set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community or your church. You see, most people don't understand anything about our heritage. They don't understand our freedom. They don't understand we're not a democracy or a republic. And, of course, the Institute of the Constitution is designed so that you can teach people, and, of course, you can learn at the same time. It is 12 lectures by Dr. John Eidsmo, each with a half hour. And then we give you the questions to ask and the answers to the questions. And, of course, you can learn about the Institute of the Constitution by going to their website, which is iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. Or call them at 410-760-9068. That's 410-760-9068. And then, of course, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get that. You need to get, of course, my book, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, the book we have republished on the foundations. And most people don't understand the Rockefeller and the Ford and the Carnegie Foundations have been funding communism and socialism in America. Why? Because people of great wealth support all power centralized in government. Give us a call right now. Well, Dr. Stan, and first, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Tom McClintock. We'll have him again before the election comes up. But we also, of course, want to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and you can help us simply by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Now, a lot of people really are having financial problems. Do you realize that 1 in 5 Americans has lost their job in the last 3 years, and many of them without any severance pay? And of course, as a result, some of the good supporters we've had for many years just are not able to continue supporting. So we hope the rest of you who are out there in the listening audience and want to step up and help us, because we have an outreach which is unusual. We have, I think, 57, 58 different outlets every week across America. Now, some of them are just half an hour a week, but people are at least hearing the truth that they've never heard before. And so if you'd like to, of course, join the Radio Liberty family and get our four best tapes and our monthly newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, if you'd like, of course, to go to our website, which is at radioliberty.com, you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much accomplished. You can listen to the archive programs there. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, you can actually look at the various products we have. If you're interested in the Berkey water filters, why, of course, you can see the pictures of them, the various big Berkeys and the Berkey lights. And if you do buy them through Radio Liberty, you'll get a four-tape set and, of course, a video that we've actually produced. That's at radioliberty.com. Go and look at them and decide what you'd like to do. And then, of course, we want to mention some of the products that we do sell because it helps to subsidize what we do. One of them, of course, is Alamax. And, of course, Alamax is a garlic product that has all the benefits of garlic without the odor to it. And, of course, you can learn more about Alamax by calling 866-405-4000. That's 866-405-4000. We hope many of you will set up an Institute of the Constitution in your community by calling 410-760-9068. 410-760-9068. And then if you're struggling with your health insurance, and of course, you know, you don't have health insurance, it's really awfully expensive, and you'd like to have something that really will provide the coverage and care you need, consider a Christian health cost sharing program. That's a Christian health cost sharing program called MediShare. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Remember, of course, we sell Phenopoly, which is a program aimed at teaching children how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. And you can change a child's life by helping them to read. We also carry the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum, which will take your children from grammar school to high school graduation for $199.95. It's all there on 22 different CDs. And of course, the only thing you have to buy are the Saxon math books. We also, of course, offer people who are concerned about perhaps there are going to be some difficult times. If you'd like to have some food on hand, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And as for a food catalog, and we'll be glad to send you one, and you can order what you need, and of course, we want to make sure you get it. So give us a call if you'd like to get a food catalog. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will tell others about our website at radioliberty.com. We hope you'll tell them about our radio programs. If you'd like a free copy of our latest newsletter, and that's the June newsletter, which goes into the background of why there's so many new diseases, antibiotic-resistant diseases and cancers, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our ministers and certainly for our leaders. But we also ask you to pray for our ministry of Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection, because we're right on the front lines of this battle. And lastly, we ask you, of course, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.